The hall was loud with drunken Harlaws, distant cousins all. Each lord had hung his banner behind the benches where his men were seated. "Too few," thought Asher Greyjoy, looking down from the gallery. "Too few by far." The benches were three-quarters empty. Carl the Maid had said as much when the black wind was approaching from the sea. He had counted the longships moored beneath her uncle's castle, and his mouth had tightened. "They have not come," he observed, "or not enough of them." He was not wrong, but Asher could not agree with him. Out where the crew might hear. She did not doubt their devotion, but even Ironborn will hesitate to give their lives for a cause that's plainly lost. "Do I have so few friends as this?" Amongst the banners she saw the silverfish of Butley, the stone tree of the stone trees, the black leviathan of Volmark, the nooses of the Myers. The rest were Harlaw scythes. Bormund placed his upon a pale blue field. Hother's was girdled with an embattled border, and the knight had quartered his with a gaudy peacock of his mother's house. Even Siegfried's Silverhair showed two scythes counterchanged on a field divided bendwise. Only the Lord Harlaw displayed the silver scythe plain upon a night-black field, as it had flown in the dawn of days. Roderick, called the Reader, Lord of the Ten Towers, Lord of Harlaw, Harlaw of Harlaw, her favourite uncle. Lord Roderick's high seat was vacant. Two scythes of beaten silver crossed above it, so huge that even a giant would have difficulty wielding them. But beneath were only empty cushions. Asher was not surprised. The feast was long concluded. Only bones and greasy platters remained upon the trestle tables. The rest was drinking, and her uncle Roderick had never been partial to the company of quarrelsome drunks. She turned to Three-Tooth, an old woman of fearful age, who had been her uncle's steward since she was known as Twelve-Tooth.
"My uncle is with his books." "Aye, where else?"
The woman was so old that a septon had once said she must have nursed the crone. That was when the faith was still tolerated on the Isles. Lord Roderick had kept septons at Ten Towers, not for his soul's sake, but for his books.
With the books and Butley, he was with him too.
Butley's standard hung in the hall, a shoal of silverfish upon a pale green field, though Asher had not seen his swift fin amongst the other longships.
"I had heard mine uncle Crozeye had old Swain Butley drowned." "Lord Christopher Butley's one is."
Tris. She wondered what had happened to Sir Wayne's elder son, Harren.
"I will find out soon enough, no doubt. This should be awkward."
She had not seen Tris Butley since. No, she ought not to dwell on it. "And my lady mother?"
"A bed," said Three-Tooth, "in the widow's tower."
"Aye, where else?" The widow the tower was named after was her aunt. Lady Gwynneth had come home to mourn after her husband had died off Fair Isle during Balon Greyjoy's first rebellion.
"I will only stay until my grief has passed," she had told her brother famously. "Though by rights Ten Towers should be mine, for I am 7 years your elder."
Long years had passed since then, but still the widow lingered, grieving, muttering from time to time that the castle should be hers.
"And now Lord Roderick has a second half-mad widow sister beneath his roof," Asher reflected. "Small wonder if he seeks solace in his books."
Even now it was hard to credit that frail, sickly Lady Alanis had outlived her husband, Lord Balon, who had seemed so hard and strong. When Asher had sailed away to war, she had done so with a heavy heart, fearing that her mother might well die before she could return. Not once had she thought that her father might perish instead.
"The Drown Guard plays savage japes upon us all, but men are crueler still."
A sudden storm and a broken rope had sent Balon Greyjoy to his death.
"Or so they claim." Asher had last seen her mother when she stopped at 10 Towers to take on fresh water on her way north to strike a Deepwood Mott. Alanis Harlaw never had the sort of beauty the singers cherished, but her daughter had loved her fierce, strong face and the laughter in her eyes. On that last visit, though, she had found Lady Alanis in a window seat, huddled beneath a pile of furs, staring out across the sea.
"Is this my mother, or her ghost?"
she remembered thinking as she kissed her cheek. Her mother's skin had been parchment thin, her long hair white. Some pride remained in the way she held her head, but her eyes were dim and cloudy, and her mouth had trembled when she asked after Theon.
"Did you bring my baby boy?"
she had asked. Theon had been 10 years old when he was carried off to Winterfell a hostage, and so far as Lady Alanis was concerned, he would always be 10 years old, it seemed.
"As Theon could not come,"
Asher had to tell her,
"her father sent him reaving along the stony shore."
Lady Alanis had naught to say to that. She only nodded slowly. Yet it was plain to see how deep her daughter's words had cut her.
"And now I must tell her that Theon is dead, and drive yet another dagger through her heart."
There were 2 knives buried there already. On the blades were writ the words Roderick and Maron, and many a time they twisted cruelly in the night.
"I will see her on the morrow,"
Asher vowed to herself. Her journey had been long and wearisome. She could not face her mother now.
"I must speak with Lord Roderick," she told Three Tooth. "See to my crew. Once they've done unloading Blackwind, they'll bring captives. I want them to have warm beds and a hot meal."
"There's cold beef in the kitchens, and mustard in a big stone jar from Old Town."
The thought of that mustard made the old woman smile. A single long brown tooth poked from her gums.
"That will not serve. We had a rough crossing. I want something hot in their bellies."
Asher hooked a thumb through the studded belt about her hips.
"Lady Glover and the children should not want for wood nor warmth. Put them in some tower, not the dungeons. The babe is sick."
"Babes are often sick. Most die, and folks are sorry. I shall ask my lord where to put these wolf folk."
She caught the woman's nose between thumb and forefinger and pinched.
"You will do as I say, and if this babe dies, no one will be sorrier than you."
Three Tooth squealed and promised to obey, till Asher let her loose and went to find her uncle. It was good to walk these halls again. 10 Towers had always felt like home to Asher, more so than Pike.
"Not one castle, 10 castles squashed together,"
she had thought the first time she had seen it. She remembered breathless races up and down the steps and along wall walks and covered bridges, fishing off the Longstone Quay, days and nights lost amongst her uncle's wealth of books. His grandfather's grandfather had raised the castle, the newest on the Isles. Lord Theomore Harlaw had lost 3 sons in the cradle, and laid the blame upon the flooded cellars, damp stones, and festering nitre of ancient Harlaw Hall. 10 Towers was airier, more comfortable, better sighted. But Lord Theomore was a changeable man, as any of his wives might have testified. He had 6 of those, as dissimilar as his 10 towers. The Book Tower was the fattest of the 10, octagonal in shape and made with great blocks of hewn stone. The stair was built within the thickness of the walls. Asher climbed quickly to the 5th story and the room where her uncle read.
"Not that there are any rooms where he does not read."
Lord Roderick was seldom seen without a book in hand, be it in the privy, on the deck of his sea song, or whilst holding audience. Asher had oft seen him reading on his high seat beneath the silver scythes. He would listen to each case as it was laid before him, pronounce his judgment, and read a bit whilst his captain of guards went to bring in the next supplicant.
She found him hunched over a table by a window, surrounded by parchment scrolls that might have come from Valyria before its doom, and heavy, leather-bound books with bronze and iron hasps. Beeswax candles as thick and tall as a man's arm burned on either side of where he sat, on ornate iron holders. Lord Roderick Harlaw was neither fat nor slim, neither tall nor short, neither ugly nor handsome. His hair was brown, as were his eyes, though the short, neat beard he favoured had gone grey. All in all, he was an ordinary man, distinguished only by his love of written words, which so many ironborn found unmanly and perverse.
"Nuncle," she closed the door behind her, "what reading was so urgent that you leave your guests without a host?" "Archmaesters Marwin's Book of Lost Books."
He lifted his gaze from the page to study her.
"Hotho bought me a copy from Oldtown. He has a daughter he would have me wed."
Lord Roderick tapped the book with a long nail.
"See here, Marwin claims to have found 3 pages of signs and portents, visions written down by the maiden daughter of Einar Targaryen before the doom came to Valyria. Does Lanny know that you're here?"
"Not as yet."
Lanny was his pet name for her mother. Only the reader called her that.
"Let her rest."
Asher moved a stack of books off a stool and seated herself.
"Three-tooth seems to have lost 2 more of her teeth. Do you call her One-tooth now?"
"I seldom call her at all. The woman frightens me. What hour is it?"
Lord Roderick glanced out of the window at the moonlit sea.
"Dark so soon, I had not noticed. You come late. We looked for you some days ago."
"The winds were against us, and I had captives to concern me. Robert Glover's wife and children. The youngest is still at the breast, and Lady Glover's milk dried up during our crossing. I had no choice but to beach Black Wind upon the stony shore, and send my men out to find a wet nurse. They found a goat instead. The girl does not thrive. Is there a nursing mother in the village? Deep Wood is important to my plans."
"Your plans must change. You come too late."
"Late and hungry."
She stretched her long legs out beneath the table and turned the pages of the nearest book. A Septon's discourse on Maegor the Cruel's war against the poor fellows.
"Oh, and thirsty too. A horn of ale would go down well, Nuncle."
Lord Roderick pursed his lips.
"You know I do not permit food nor drink in my library. The books might suffer harm."
Asher laughed. Her uncle frowned.
"You do like to provoke me."
"Oh, don't look so aggrieved. I've never met a man I didn't provoke. You should know that well enough by now. But enough of me. You are well."
He shrugged.
"Well enough. My eyes grow weaker. I have sent to Mare for a lens to help me read."
"And how fares my aunt?"
Lord Roderick sighed.
"Still 7 years, my elder, and convinced 10 towers should be hers. Gwyneth grows forgetful, but that she does not forget. She mourns for her dead husband as deeply as she did the day he died, though she cannot always recall his name."
"I am certain she never knew his name."
Asher closed the Septon's book with a thump.
"Was my father murdered?"
"So your mother believes.
There were times when she would gladly have murdered him herself," she thought. "And what does my nuncle believe?" "Balon fell to his death when a rope bridge broke beneath him. A storm was rising, and the bridge was swaying and twisting with each gust of wind."
Roderick shrugged.
"Or so we are told. Your mother had a bird for Maester Windermere."
Asher slid her dirk out of its sheath and began to clean the dirt from beneath her fingernails.
3 years away, and the crow's eye returns the very day my father dies.
The day after, we had heard. Silence was still out to sea when Balon died, or so it is claimed. Even so, I will agree that Euron's return was
timely, shall we say?
That is not how I would say it. Asher slammed the point of the dirk into the table.
Where are my ships?
I counted 20 longships moored below. Not near enough to throw the crow's eye off my father's chair.
I sent the summons, in your name, for the love I bear you and your mother. House Harlaw has gathered, Stonetree as well, and Volmark some miles, all from the Isle of Harlaw. One isle out of 7. I saw one lonely Butley banner in the hall from Pike. Where are the ships from Saltcliffe, from Orkwood, from the Wakes?
Baylor Blacktide came from Blacktide to consult with me, and just as soon set sail again.
Lord Roderick closed the book of lost books.
He is on Old Wyke by now.
Old Wyke?
Asher had feared he was about to say that they had all gone to Pike to do homage to the Crow's Eye.
Why Old Wyke?
I thought you would have heard. Aaron Dampier has called a king's moot.
Asher threw back her head and laughed.
The drowned god must have shoved a prickled fish up Uncle Aaron's ass. A king's moot? Is this some jape, or does he mean it truly?
The Dampier has not japed since he was drowned, and the other priests have taken up the call. Blind Baron Blacktide, Tal the thrice drowned.
Even the old grey gull has left that rock he lives on to preach this king's moot all across Harlaw. The captains are gathering an old wick as we speak.
Asher was astonished.
Has the Crow's Eye agreed to attend this holy farce and abide by its decision?
The Crow's Eye does not confide in me. Since he summoned me to Pike to do him homage, I've had no word from Euron.
A king's moot, this is something new, or rather, something very old. And my uncle, Victarion, what does he make of the Dampfer's notion?
Victarion was sent word of your father's death, and of this king's moot, too, I do not doubt. Beyond that, I cannot say.
Better a king's moot than a war.
I believe I'll kiss the Dampfer's smelly feet and pluck the seaweed from out between his toes.
Asher wrenched loose her dirk and sheathed it once again.
A bloody king's moot.
An old wake, confirmed Lord Roderick. Though I pray it is not bloody. I have been consulting Hayrig's History of the Ironborn. When last the Salt Kings and the Rock Kings met in King's Moot, Uron of Orkmond let his axemen loose amongst them, and Naga's ribs turned red with gore. House Grey Iron ruled unchosen for 1,000 years from that dark day, until the Andals came.
You must lend me Hayrig's book, Nuncle.
She would need to learn all she could of King's Moots before she reached Old Wyke.
You may read it here. It's old and fragile.
He studied her, frowning.
Archmaester Rigney once wrote that history is a wheel, for the nature of man is fundamentally unchanging. What has happened before will perforce happen again, he said. I think of that whenever I contemplate the Crow's Eye. Euron Greyjoy sounds queerly like Euron Grey Iron to these old ears. I shall not go to Old Wyke, nor should you.
Asher smiled.
And miss the first king's moot called in, how long has it been, Uncle? 4,000 years, if Hayrig can be believed.
Half that, if you accept Maester Denniston's arguments in questions. Going to Old Wyke serves no purpose. This dream of kingship is a madness in our blood. I told your father, sir, the first time he rose, and it is more true now than it was then. It's land we need, not crowns. With Stannis Baratheon and Tywin Lannister contending for the Iron Throne, we have a rare chance to improve our lot. Let us take one side or the other. Help them to victory with our fleets, and claim the lands we need from a grateful king.
That might be worth some thought, once I sit the Seastone chair.
said Asher. Her uncle sighed. "Oh, you will not want to hear this, Asher, but you will not be chosen. No woman has ever ruled the Ironborn. Gwynnes is 7 years my elder, but when our father died, the Tentars came to me. It will be the same for you. You are Balin's daughter, not his son, and you have 3 uncles.
Four.
3 Kraken uncles. I do not count.
You do with me. So long as I have my nuncle at Tentars, I have Harlaw.
Harlaw was not the largest of the Iron Islands, but it was the richest and most populous, and Lord Roderick's power was not to be despised. On Harlaw, Harlaw had no rival. The Volmarks and Stone Trees had large holdings on the isle, and boasted famous captains and fierce warriors of their own. But even the fiercest bent beneath the scythe. The Kennings and the Myers, once bitter foes, had long ago been beaten down to vassals.
My cousins do me fealty, and in war I should command their swords and sails. In Kingsmoot, though,
Lord Roderick shook his head,
beneath the bones of Nagar every captain stands as equal. Some may shout your name,
I do not doubt it,
but not enough. And when the shouts ring out for Victarion or the Crow's Eye, some of those now drinking in my hall will join the rest. I say again, do not sail into this storm. Your fight is hopeless.
No fight is hopeless till it has been fought. I have the best claim. I am the heir of Balon's body.
You are still a willful child. Think of your poor mother. You are all that Lanny has left to her. I will put a torch to Black Wind, if need be, to keep you here.
What, and make me swim to Old Wyke?
A long, cold swim, for a crown you cannot keep. Your father had more courage than sense. The old way served the Isles well when we were one small kingdom amongst many. But Aegon's conquest put an end to that. Balon refused to see what was plain before him. The old way died with Black Heron and his sons.
I know that.
Asha had loved her father, but she did not delude herself. Balon had been blind in some respects.
A brave man, but a bad lord. Does that mean we must live and die like thralls to the Iron Throne? If there are rocks to starboard and a storm to port, a wise captain steers a third course.
Show me this third course.
I shall, at my queen's moot. Nuncle, how can you even think of not attending? This will be history, alive.
I prefer my history dead. Dead history is writ in ink, the living sort in blood.
Do you want to die old and craven in your bed?
Well, how else?
Though not till I've done reading. Lord Roderick went to the window.
You have not asked about your lady mother.
I was afraid. How is she?
Stronger. She may yet outlive us all. She will certainly outlive you if you persist in this folly.
She eats more than she did when she first came here, and oft sleeps through the night.
Good.
In her final years on Pike, Lady Alanis could not sleep. She would wander the halls at night with a candle, looking for her sons.
Meron!
She would call shrilly.
Roderick, where are you? Theon, my baby, come to mother!
Many a time Asher had watched the maester draw splinters from her mother's heels of a morning, after she had crossed the swaying plank bridge to the sea tower on bare feet.
I will see her in the morning.
And she will ask for word of Theon.
The Prince of Winterfell. What have you told her?
Little and less. There was naught to tell.
He hesitated.
You are certain that he is dead?
I am certain of nothing.
You found a body?
We found parts of many bodies. The wolves were there before us, the four-legged sort, but they showed scant reverence for their two-legged kin. The bones of the slain were scattered, cracked open for their marrow. I confess it was hard to know what happened there. It seemed as though the Northmen fought amongst themselves.
Crows will fight over a dead man's flesh and kill each other for his eyes. Lord Roderick stared across the sea, watching the play of moonlight on the waves.
We had one king, then five. Now all I see are crows squabbling over the corpse of Westeros.
He fastened the shutters.
Do not go to Ulwick, Asher. Stay with your mother. We shall not have her long, I fear.
Asher shifted in her seat.
My mother raised me to be bold. If I do not go, I will spend the rest of my life wondering what might have happened if I had.
If you do go, the rest of your life may be too short for wondering.
Better that than fill the remainder of my days complaining that the Seastone chair by rights was mine. I am no Gwyneth.
That made him wince.
Asher, my two tall sons fed the crabs of Fair Isle. I am not like to wed again. Stay, and I shall name you heir to the Ten Towers. Be content with that.
10 Towers?
Would that I could. Your cousins would not like that.
The knight, O Siegfried, Hotho Humpback.
They have lands and seats of their own. True enough.
Damp, decaying Harlow Hall belonged to old Siegfried Harlow, the Silverhair. Humpback Hotho Harlow had his seat at the Tower of Glimmering, on a crag above the western coast. The knight, Sir Harris Harlow, kept court at Grey Garden. Boroman the Blue ruled atop Harrowden Hill. But each was subject to Lord Roderick.
Boroman has 3 sons. Siegfried Silverhair has grandsons. And Hotho has ambitions,
Asher said.
They all mean to follow you, even Siegfried. That one intends to live forever.
The knight will be the Lord of Harlow after me, her uncle said. But he can rule from Grey Garden as easily as from here. Do fealty to him for the castle, and Sir Harris will protect you.
I can protect myself, Nuncle. I'm a Kraken. Asher, of House Greyjoy.
She pushed to her feet.
It's my father's seat I want, not yours. Those sighs of yours look perilous. One could fall and slice my head off. No, I'll sit the Seastone chair.
Then you're just another crow, screaming for carrion. Roderick sat again behind his table.
Go!
I wish to return to Archmaester Marwyn and his search.
Let me know if he should find another page.
Her uncle was her uncle. He would never change.
But he will come to Old Wight, no matter what he says.
By now her crew would be eating in the hall. Asher knew she ought to join them, to speak of this gathering on Old Wight and what it meant for them. Her own men would be solidly behind her, but she would need the rest as well. Her Harlaw cousins, the Volmarks and the Stone Trees.
Those are the ones I must win.
Her victory at Deepwood Mott would serve her in good stead, once her men began to boast of it, as she knew they would. The crew of her Black Wind took a perverse pride in the deeds of their woman captain. Half of them loved her like a daughter, and the other half wanted to spread her legs. But either sort would die for her.
And I for them,
she was thinking as she shouldered through the door at the bottom of the steps into the moonlit yard. Asher? A shadow stepped out from behind the well. Her hand went to a dirk at once, until the moonlight transformed the dark shape into a man in a sealskin cloak.
Another ghost. Triss, I thought to find you in the hall.
I wanted to see you.
What part of me, I wonder?
She grinned.
Well, here I stand, all grown up. Look all you like.
A woman. He moved closer. And beautiful. Christopher Botley had filled out since last she'd seen him. But he had the same unruly hair that she remembered, and eyes as large and trusting as a seal's.
Sweet eyes, truly.
That was the trouble with poor Christopher. He was too sweet for the Iron Islands.
His face has grown comely, she thought.
As a boy, Triss had been much troubled by pimples. Asher had suffered the same affliction. Perhaps that had been what drew them together.
I was sorry to hear about your father, she told him.
I grieve for yours.
Why?
Asher almost asked. It was Balin who'd sent the boy away from Pike, to be a ward of Baelor Blacktides.
Is it true you are Lord Botley now?
In name, at least. Heron died at Moat Cailin. One of the bug devils shot him with a poison arrow. But I am the Lord of Nothing. When my father denied his claim to the sea stone chair, the crow's eye drowned him and made my uncle swear him fealty. Even after that, he gave half my father's lands to Ironholt. Lord Winch was the first man to bend his knee and call him king. Huss Winch was strong on Pike, but Asher took care not to let her dismay show.
Winch never had your father's courage.
Your uncle bought him, Triss said. The silence returned with holes full of treasure. Plate and pearls, emeralds and rubies, sapphires big as eggs. Bags of coin so heavy that no man can lift them. The crow's eye has been buying friends at every hand. My uncle Gorman calls himself Lord Botley now, and rules in Lordsport as your uncle's man.
You are the rightful Lord Botley, she assured him. Once I hold the sea stone chair, your father's land shall be restored.
If you like, it's naught to me. You look so lovely in the moonlight, Asher. A woman grown now. But I remember when you were a skinny girl with a face all full of pimples.
Why must they always mention the pimples? I remember that as well, though not as fondly as you do.
Of the five boys her mother had brought to Pike, to fuss after Ned Stark had taken her last living son as hostage, Triss had been closest to Asher in age. He had not been the first boy she had ever kissed, but he was the first to undo the laces on her jerkin and slip a sweaty hand beneath to feel her budding breasts.
I would have let him feel more than that, if he'd been bold enough.
Her first flowering had come upon her during the war, and wakened her desire. But even before that, Asher had been curious.
He was there. He was mine own age. And he was willing. That was all it was. That and the moon blood.
Even so, she'd called it love, till Triss began to go on about the children she would bear him. A dozen sons at least, and, oh, some daughters too.
I don't want to have a dozen sons, she had told him, appalled. I want to have adventures.
Not long after, Maester Cailin found them at their play, and young Tristopher Butley was sent away to Blacktide. "I wrote you letters," he said, "but Maester Jocelyn would not send them. Once I gave a stag to an oarsman on a trader bound for Lordsport, who promised to put my letter in your hands. Your oarsman winked at you, and threw your letter in the sea. I feared as much. They never gave me your letters either. I wrote none. In truth, she had been relieved when Triss was sent away. By then his fumblings had begun to bore her. That was not something he would care to hear, however.
Aaron Damfair has called a king's moot. Will you come and speak for me? I will go anywhere with you, but Lord Blacktide says this king's moot is a dangerous folly. He thinks your uncle will descend on them and kill them all. As Euron did. He's mad enough. He lacks the strength. You do not know his strength. He's been gathering men on Pike. Orkwood of Orkmont brought him 20 longships, and Pinchface, John Meyer, a dozen. Left-hand Lucas Cod is with them, and Heron Halfhor, the Red Oarsman. Kemet Pike, the bastard. Roderick Freeborn, Torwald Browntooth. Men of small account. Asher knew them, every one. The sons of salt waves. The grandsons of thralls. The cuds. Do you know their words? Though all men do despise us, Triss said. But if they catch you in those nets of theirs, you'll be as dead
as if they had been dragon lords. And here's worse. The crow's eye brought back monsters from the east. Aye, and wizards too.
And uncle always had a fondness for freaks and fools, said Usher. My father used to fight with him about it. Let the wizards call upon their gods. The damp fair will call on ours and drown them. Will I have your voice at the Queen's Moot, Triss?
You shall have all of me. I am your man forever.
Asher, I would wed you. Your lady mother has given her consent. She stifled a groan.
Oh, you might have asked me first, though you might not have liked the answer half so well.
I am no second son now, he went on. I am the rightful Lord Butley, as you said yourself. And you are...
What I am will be settled on Old Wyke. Triss, we are no longer children, fumbling at each other and trying to see what fits where. You think you want to wed me, but you don't.
I do. All I dream about is you, Asher. I swear upon the bones of Naga, I have never touched another woman.
Well, go touch one, or two, or ten. I have touched more men than I can count. Some with my lips, more with my axe.
She had surrendered her virtue at 6 and 10 to a beautiful blonde-haired sailor on a trading galley up from Lice. He knew only 6 words of the common tongue, but fuck was one of them, the very word she'd hoped to hear. Afterward, Asher had the sense to find a woods witch who showed her how to brew moon tea to keep her belly flat. Butley blinked, as if he did not quite understand what she had said.
I thought you would wait. Why?
He rubbed his mouth.
Asher, were you forced?
So forced, I tore his tunic. You do not want to wed me. Take my word on that. You are a sweet boy and always were, but I am no sweet girl. If we wed, soon enough, you'd come to hate me.
Never, Asher. I have ached for you.
She had heard enough of this. A sickly mother, a murdered father, a plague of uncles were enough for any woman to contend with.
She did not acquire a lovesick puppy, too. Find a brothel, Triss. They'll cure you of that ache.
I could never...
Tristopher shook his head.
You and I were meant to be, Asher. I've always known you would be my wife and the mother of my sons.
He seized her upper arm. In a blink, her dirk was at his throat.
Take your hand away, or you won't live long enough to breed a son.
No!
When he did, she lowered the blade.
You want a woman? Well and good. I'll put one in your bed tonight. Pretend she's me, if that will give you pleasure, but do not presume to grab at me again. I am your queen, not your wife. Remember that.
Asher sheathed her dirk and left him standing there, with a fat drop of blood slowly creeping down his neck, black in the pale light of the moon. Cersei.
Oh, I pray the Seven will not let it rain upon the king's wedding,
Jocelyn Swift said as she laced up the queen's gown.
No one wants rain, said Cersei.
For herself, she wanted sleet and ice, howling winds, thunder to shake the very stones of the Red Keep. She wanted a storm to match her rage. To Jocelyn she said,
Tighter! Cinch it tighter, you simpering little fool!
It was the wedding that had enraged her, though the slow-witted Swift girl made a safer target. Tommen's hold upon the Iron Throne was not secure enough for her to risk offending Highgarden. Not so long as Stannis Baratheon held Dragonstone and Storm's End, so long as River Run continued in defiance, so long as Iron Men prowled the sea like wolves. So Jocelyn must needs eat the meal Cersei would sooner have served to Margaery Tyrell and her hideous, wrinkled grandmother. To break her fast, the queen sent to the kitchens for 2 boiled eggs, a loaf of bread, and a pot of honey. But when she cracked the first egg and found a bloody half-formed chick inside, her stomach roiled.
take this away and bring me hot spiced wine, she told Sunil.
The chill in the air was settling in her bones, and she had a long, nasty day ahead of her. Nor did Jamie help her mood when he turned up all in white and still unshaven, to tell her how he meant to keep her son from being poisoned. I will have men in the kitchen watching as each dish is prepared, he said. Sir Adam's gold cloaks will escort the servants as they bring the food to table, to make certain no tampering takes place along the way. Sir Boris will be tasting every course before Tommen puts a bite into his mouth. And if all that should fail, Maester Balabar will be seated in the back of the hall with purges and antidotes for 20 common poisons on his person. Tommen will be safe, I promise you. Safe? The word tasted bitter on her tongue. Jamie did not understand. No one understood. Only Malara had been in the tent to hear the old hag's croaking threats, and Malara was long dead. Tyrion will not kill the same way twice. He's too cunning for that. He could be under the floor even now, listening to every word we say, and making plans to open Tommen's throat. Suppose he was, said Jamie. Whatever plans he makes, he will still be small and stunted. Tommen will be surrounded by the finest knights in Westeros. The King's Guard will protect him. Cersei glanced at where the sleeve of her brother's white silk tunic had been pinned up over his stump. I remember how well they guarded Joffrey, these splendid knights of yours. I want you to remain with Tommen all night. Is that understood? I will have a guardsman outside his door. She seized his arm. Not a guardsman, you. And inside his bedchamber. In case Tyrion crawls out of the hearth, he won't. So you say. Will you tell me that you found all the hidden tunnels in these walls? They both knew better. I will not have Tommen alone with Margaery, not for so much as half a heartbeat. They will not be alone. Her cousins will be with them. As will you. I command it in the king's name. Cersei had not wanted Tommen and his wife to share a bed at all, but the Tyrells had insisted. Husband and wife should sleep together, the Queen of Thorns had said, even if they do no more than sleep. His Grace's bed is big enough for two, surely. Lady Ellaria had echoed her good mother. Let the children warm each other in the night. It will bring them closer. Margaery oft shares her blankets with her cousins. They sing and play games and whisper secrets to each other when the candles are snuffed out. How delightful, Cersei had said. Let them continue, by all means, in the maiden vault.
I'm sure Her Grace knows best, Lady Elena had said to Lady O'Leary. She's a boy's own mother, after all. Of that we are all sure. And surely we can agree about the wedding night. A man should not sleep apart from his wife on the night of their wedding. It is ill luck for their marriage if they do.
Some day I will teach you the meaning of ill luck, the Queen had vowed. Margaery may share Tommen's bedchamber for that one night, she had been forced to say. No longer. Your Grace is so gracious, the Queen of Thorns had replied, and everyone had exchanged smiles. Cersei's fingers were digging into Jamie's arm hard enough to leave bruises. I need eyes inside that room, she said. To see what? He asked. There can be no dangers of a consummation. Tommen is much too young. And Ossifer Plum was much too dead. But that did not stop him fathering a child, did it? Her brother looked lost. Who is Ossifer Plum? Was he Lord Philip's father, or who? He is near as ignorant as Robert. All his wits were in his sword hand. Forget Plum, just remember what I told you. Swear to me that you will stay by Tommen's side until the sun comes up. As you command, he said, as if her fears were groundless. Do you still mean to go ahead and burn the Tower of the Hand? After the feast, it was the only part of the day's festivities that Cersei thought she might enjoy. Our Lord Father was murdered in that tower, I cannot bear to look at it. If the guards are good, the fire may smoke a few wreaths from the rubble. Jamie rolled his eyes. Tyrion, you mean? Him and Lord Varys and this jailer? If any of them were hiding in the tower, we would have found them. I've had a small army going at it with picks and hammers. We've knocked through walls and ripped up floors and uncovered 50 secret passages. And for all you know, there may be 50 more. Some of the secret crawlways had turned out to be so small that Jamie had needed pages and stable boys to explore them. A passage to the black cells had been found, and a stone well that seemed to have no bottom. They had found a chamber full of skulls and yellowed bones, and four sacks of tarnished silver coins from the reign of the first King Viserys. They had found 1,000 rats as well, but neither Tyrion nor Varys had been amongst them. And Jaime had finally insisted on putting an end to the search. One boy had gotten stuck in a narrow passage and had to be pulled out by his feet, shrieking. Another fell down a shaft and broke his legs, and two guardsmen vanished exploring a slide tunnel. Some of the other guards swore they could hear them calling faintly through the stone. But when Jamie's men tore down the wall, they found only earth and rubble on the far side.
The imp is small and cunning. He may still be in the walls. If he is, the fire will smoke him out. Even if Tyrion were still hiding in the castle, he won't be in the Tower of the Hand. We've reduced it to a shell. Would that we could do the same to the rest of this foul castle, said Cersei. After the war, I mean to build a new palace beyond the river.
She had dreamed of it the night before last, a magnificent white castle surrounded by woods and gardens, long leagues from the stinks and noise of King's Landing.
This city is a cesspit. For half a groat I would move the court to Lannisport and rule the realm from Casterly Rock. That would be an even greater folly than burning the Tower of the Hand. So long as Tommen sits the Iron Throne, the realm sees him as the true king. Hide him under the rock, and he becomes just another claimant to the throne, no different than Stannis.
I am aware of that, the queen said sharply. I said that I wanted to move the court to Lannisport, not that I would.
Were you always this, though, or did losing a hand make you stupid?
Jamie ignored that. If these flames spread beyond the tower, you may end up burning down the castle, whether you mean to or not. Wildfire is treacherous.
Lord Halen has assured me that his pyromancers can control the fire.
The Guild of Alchemists had been brewing fresh wildfire for a fortnight.
Let all of King's Landing see the flames. It will be a lesson to our enemies.
Now you sound like Ares. Her nostrils flared.
Guard your tongue, sir.
I love you too, sweet sister.
How could I ever have loved that wretched creature? She wondered after he had gone.
He was your twin, your shadow, your other half,
another voice whispered.
Once, perhaps, she thought. No longer. He has become a stranger to me.
Compared to the magnificence of Joffrey's nuptials, the wedding of King Tommen was a modest affair, and small. No one wanted another lavish ceremony, least of all the queen, and no one wanted to pay for one, least of all the Tyrells. So the young king took Marjorie Tyrell to wife in the Red Keep's royal sept, with fewer than 100 guests looking on in place of the thousands who had seen his brother joined to the same woman. The bride was fair and gay and beautiful, the groom still baby-faced and plump. He recited his vows in a high, childish voice, promising his love and devotion to Mace Tyrell's twice-widowed daughter. Marjorie wore the same gown she had worn to marry Joffrey, an airy confection of sheer ivory silk, mirish lace, and seed pearls. Cersei herself was still in black as a sign of mourning for her murdered firstborn. His widow might be pleased to laugh and drink and dance and put all memories of Joff aside, but his mother would not forget him so easily.
"This is wrong,"
she thought. "It is too soon. A year, 2 years, that would have been time enough. Highgarden should have been content with a betrothal."
Cersei stared back to where Mace Tyrell stood between his wife and mother.
"You force me into this travesty of a wedding, my lord, and I shall not soon forget it."
When it was time for the changing of the cloaks, the bride sank gracefully to her knees, and Tommen covered her with the heavy cloth of gold monstrosity that Robert had cloaked Cersei in on their own wedding day, with a crown stag of Baratheon worked upon its back in beads of onyx. Cersei had wanted to use the fine red silk cloak Joffrey had used.
"It was a cloak my lord father used when he wed my lady mother," she explained to the Tyrells,
but the Queen of Thorns had balked her in that as well.
"That old thing,"
the crone had said,
"it looks a bit threadbare to me, and dare I say, unlucky. And wouldn't a stag be more fitting for King Robert's true-born son? In my day, a bride donned her husband's colours, not his lady mother's."
Thanks to Stannis and his filthy letter, there were already too many rumours concerning Tommen's parentage. Cersei dared not fan the fires by insisting that he drape his bride in Lannister crimson. So she yielded as gracefully as she could. But the sight of all that gold and onyx still filled her with resentment. "The more we give these Tyrells, the more they demand of us." When all the vows were spoken, the king and his new queen stepped outside the sept to accept congratulations.
"Westeros has two queens now, and the young one is as beautiful as the old one,"
boomed Lyle Crakehall, an oaf of a knight, who oft reminded Cersei of her late and unlamented husband. She could have slapped him. Giles Rusby made to kiss her hand and only succeeded in coughing on her fingers. Lord Redwine kissed her on one cheek and Mace Tyrell on both. Grandmaester Pycelle told Cersei that she had not lost a son, but rather gained a daughter. At least she was spared Lady Tanda's tearful embraces. None of the Stokeworth women had appeared, and for that much the Queen was grateful. Amongst the last was Kevin Lannister.
"I understand you mean to leave us for another wedding," the Queen said to him.
"Hearthstone has cleared the broken men from Derry Castle," he replied. "Lancer's bride awaits us there."
"Will your lady wife be joining you for the nuptials?"
"Oh, the Riverlands are still too dangerous. Vargo Hoat's scum remain abroad, and Beric Dondarrion has been hanging freeze. Is it true that Sandor Clegane has joined him?"
"Well, how does he know that?" "Some say. Reports are confused."
The bird had come last night from a septary on an island hard by the mouth of the Trident. The nearby town of Saltpans had been savagely raided by a band of outlaws, and some of the survivors claimed a roaring brute in a hound's head helm was amongst the raiders. Supposedly he'd killed a dozen men and raped a girl of 12. "No doubt Lancel will be eager to hunt down Clegane and Lord Beric both, to restore the king's peace to the Riverlands."
Sir Kevin stared into her eyes for a moment. "My son is not the man to deal with Sandor Clegane."
"We agree on that much, at least. His father might be."
Her uncle's mouth grew hard. "If my service is not required at the Rock..."
"Your service was required here."
Cersei had named her cousin Damien Lannister a castellan for the Rock, and another cousin, Sir Davin Lannister, the Warden of the West.
"Insolence has its price, uncle. Bring us Sandor's head, and I know his grace will be most grateful. Joff may have liked the man, but Tommen was always afraid of him, with good reason, it would seem."
"When a dog goes bad, the fault lies with his master,"
Sir Kevin said. Then he turned and walked away. Jamie escorted her to the small hall where the feast was being readied.
"I blame you for all this," she whispered as they walked. "Let them wed," you said. "Marjorie should be mourning Joffrey, not marrying his brother. She should be as sick with grief as I am."
I do not believe she is a maid. Renly had a cock, didn't he? He was Robert's brother. He surely had a cock. If that disgusting old crone thinks that I will allow my son to...
You will be rid of Lady Elena soon enough, Jamie broke in quietly. She's returning to Highgarden on the morrow.
So she says. Cersei did not trust any Tyrell promise. She's leaving, he insisted. Mace is taking half the Tyrell strength to Storm's End, and the other half will be going back to the Reach with Sir Garland to make good his claim on Brightwater. A few more days, and the only roses left in King's Landing will be Margaery and her ladies and a few guardsmen. And Sir Loras, or have you forgotten your sworn brother? Sir Loras is a knight of the King's Guard. Sir Loras is so Tyrell he pisses Rosewater. He should never have been given a white cloak. He would not have been my choice, I'll grant you. No one troubled to consult me. Loras will do well enough, I think. Once a man puts on that cloak, it changes him. It certainly changed you, and not for the better. I love you too, sweet sister. He held the door for her, and walked her to the high table and her seat beside the king. Margaery was on the other side of Tommen, in the place of honour. When she entered arm in arm with the little king, she made a point of stopping to kiss Cersei on the cheeks and throw her arms around her. "Your Grace," the girl said, bold as polished brass, "I feel as though I have a second mother now. I pray that we shall be very close, united by our love for your sweet son."
"I love both my sons."
"Joffrey's in my prayers as well," said Margaery. "I loved him dearly, though I never had the chance to know him."
"Liar," the queen thought. "If you had loved him even for an instant, you would not have been in such unseemly haste to wed his brother. His crown was all you ever wanted. For half a groat she would have slapped the blushing bride right there upon the dais, in view of half the court." Like the service, the wedding feast was modest. Lady Illyria had made all the arrangements. Cersei had not had the stomach to face that daunting task again, after the way Joffrey's wedding had ended. Only 7 courses were served. Butterbumps and Moonboy entertained the guests between dishes, and musicians played as they ate. They listened to pipers and fiddlers, a lute and a flute, a high harp. The only singer was some favourite of Lady Margaery's, a dashing young cock-a-hoop clad all in shades of azure, who called himself the Blue Bard. He sang a few love songs and retired.
"What a disappointment,"
Lady Elena complained loudly.
"I was hoping for the range of Castlemere."
Whenever Cersei looked at the old crone, the face of Maggie the Frog seemed to float before her eyes, wrinkled and terrible, and wise.
"All old women look alike," she tried to tell herself. "That's all it is."
In truth, the bent-back sorceress had looked nothing like the Queen of Thorns, yet somehow the sight of Lady Alina's nasty little smile was enough to put her back in Maggie's tent again. She could still remember the smell of it, redolent with queer eastern spices, and the softness of Maggie's gums as she sucked the blood from Cersei's finger.
"Queen you shall be,"
the old woman had promised, with her lips still wet and red and glistening,
"until there comes another, younger and more beautiful, to cast you down and take all that you hold dear."
Cersei glanced past Tommen to where Margaery sat laughing with her father. "She is pretty enough," she had to admit. "But most of that is youth. Even peasant girls are pretty at a certain age, when they are still fresh and innocent and unspoiled, and most of them have the same brown hair and brown eyes as she does. Only a fool would ever claim she was more beautiful than I." The world was full of fools, however. So was her son's court. Her mood was not improved when Mace Tyrell arose to lead the toast. He raised a golden goblet high, smiling at his pretty little daughter, and in a booming voice said, "To the king and queen!" The other sheep all baaed along with him.
"The king and queen!"
they cried, smashing their cups together. "The king and queen!" She had no choice but to drink along with them, all the time wishing